Our guest today, playing in front of an audience in our World Cafe studio, KT Tunstall, is a celebrated singer-songwriter from Scotland. She broke out in 2004 with her song Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, and has released five albums since then. Her latest record, called Invisible Empire / Crescent Moon, like the title, has two distinct halves, coming from two sessions at Hal Gelb's studio in Arizona. In between the sessions, a lot happened in KT's life, including her father dying and the breakup of her marriage to drummer Luke Bullen. We start off the session with a performance of the title track of the first half of the album from KT, Invisible Empire.
I thought the candle was gonna go out. The wind was blowing and the door was open, but the candle never went out, never went out. The wave found its way to the shore. I thought it was a ripple and nothing more, but the wave found its way all the way to the shore. Whoa, I wanna burn this house. I know I wanna jump into the fire. Whoa, I've gotta tear them down, the pinnacles of my invisible empire. Another gamble never works twice. All the distractions at the table and a weighted dice, but the thrill of it feels so nice. You do it all again. But I look to the chips I'd lose. I'm standing on a platform with my neck in the noose, and I know it's not my time, not my time. Whoa, burn this house. I know I wanna jump into the fire. Whoa, I've gotta tear them down, the pinnacles of my invisible empire. And if I do all the things I do while I tell myself that I'm staying true, I'll never stop, you know, I'll never stop. No, I'll never think about it. Put an end to all this time that I would spend with it on my mind. It never stopped, you know, it never stopped. You know, I always wondered about it. I wondered about the wonder. Whoa, 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 I wear a rusting crown. I know this dynasty is falling. The crowd shout for another round to see the ruin. The spectacular diamonds buried, icebergs, the minarets and the marketplaces, the signal fires of my invisible empire.
KT Tunstall is playing live for us today at the cafe, and you know, I was sitting here watching you perform, KT, and I just realized that so much of your career you've done it just like this solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Even when you know you're selling monstrous millions of records,
there was definitely a detour in the middle.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Where I ended up with two buses and a truck, and about 16 or 17 other people. But it's great to have that experience. You know, it's really and kind of unlikely. When you look at girl with guitar from Scotland on paper. It doesn't necessarily shout production truck.
Well, I love it. You got your tambourine.
Yeah, and, in a towel.
In a towel.
So it's not too obnoxious.
Hit that so people know what we're talking about. Oh, yeah. And what's the most outrageous pedal you have there for your acoustic guitar?
At the moment, the most outrageous pedal I have is the Red Llama.
Ooh.
The Red Llama can do some damage. So like, you have a nice sound like this, sort of, you know, and then it turns into... Everybody! Sorry, that was my Tom Petty moment. I apologize.
So who needs a band? There you go.
Exactly.
Well, now, as you mentioned, there's two halves of this record, and Invisible Empire, the tune you just did, was the first half. What are all the differences between the halves? Because it's more than just sound. There's a lot of differences between these two.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional to make a record in that way. It happened very naturally. And basically, I made the record out in Arizona, in Tucson, with a great musician called Hau Gelb. He fronts a band called Giant Sand, desert punk maverick. And it was really good for me to work with someone like that, because I come at it from a much more traditional, slightly more formulaic way of doing things, really, because that's what I've known. And so it was great to work with him, because he's just completely off script. So he said, come out to Tucson. I work in this great studio, and just let's have some fun. Let's record some stuff. And so it was kind of a bit of an accidental record. It was always would have been great if a record did come out of it. But really, it was an experiment to just go and try some recording. I'd never recorded to old reel-to-reel tape machine before, and it just was a revelation for me. Just, I hate working with computers with my voice, because you can fix things. You can go, if you make a mistake, you just go in and fix it. And with the tape, it just doesn't lie. So all of a sudden, I have this audience in the tape machine, because you have to perform for it. And as a musician, it's very fulfilling to, you know, to make an album. It's all live performances. It's great. And I went out in April of 2012, and I'd written 8 or 9 songs in a couple of months after meeting Hau, which was really unusual for me. It was a lot. And then I didn't go back out again until November. So it was 2 10-day sessions, very quick, really. And my life just had this seismic shift in between these two sessions. And the material, because of that, I wrote the second half while I was out there, apart from Feel It All, which I wrote over the summer. It might not sound radically different to someone listening to the record, but it's coming from a really different place.
You should go through what happened, because some really important changes in your life.
Yeah, so I lost my father in the summer. We'd been very close, and he wasn't well, but it was still a shock that he left. And my personal life just completely went inside out and upside down. And so I just ended up in a very different place in my life, on my own, different family setup, you know, dealing with stuff that many people deal with, but it's always pretty...
But all
life-changing when it happens to you. And so it just was making sense creatively for me. And weirdly, the songs on the first half of the record, Invisible Empire, had this very odd voodoo fortune-telling quality to them, where I'd written about smaller issues with those songs. And over the summer, it was like they were talking to me about what was happening then. It was like my subconscious had been way ahead of me and knew what was coming, and wrote these songs that meant so much more once all this stuff was happening. I mean, they were really psychic, some of them. Hau is actually a big believer of that. He thinks that the subconscious is way ahead of the physical experience.
Talk a little bit about Hau Gelb, because people should know a little bit about him, because he's one strange dude.
He really is.
He's really kind of wonderful. And I'm listening to this record, and I'm saying, wow, this is really thoughtful of him, because this doesn't sound like the, you know, kind of UFO soundtrack that a lot of his recordings sound like. So he really seems really sensitive to these songs.
It was brilliant working with him, because his way of producing an artist, he's worked with others before, but is really alchemical. So he kind of creates the laboratory, if you like. He kind of puts in ingredients for the soup and then lets the soup happen. So he'll get the right musicians. He got a bunch of guys from Giant Sand. He'd get the right vibe. He'd get the right amps going, the right pedals going. And then just before I'm about to play a song, he gives me some 1940s guitar that I've never played before. And I'm, wow, delighted. And especially when you're recording to tape, where it's a real live performance, it's all about how you feel, how you lay it down, and whether you get that magic. And that's what he did, really, was just create that. And it's funny being a Londoner, because it's so fast-paced. Everyone's watching the clock, and you know, everyone's in the studio on time. And I'm usually late, but I'm not late at all compared to Hugh Gelb. And so I was like, how, we were meant to start at 11 and it's like 1. And he goes, it's coffee time. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, Katie, I'm not late. I just arrived ready. and actually that was really true. That although because he didn't crack the whip about these things, we were already, when we sat down to play, we were really, you know, no one was telling us to do it. We were doing it because we were ready to do it. And Made of Glass, one of the songs which I'll play for you, that was just a one take. We just all sat down, played it, and we're like, it was good.
Well, now, do you want to go back to Invisible Empire? Or you want to move ahead? What do you want to do next?
I'll stay with the first half of the record. And this is a song called Carried. This is a particularly spooky voodoo one where I was thinking about my own demise, as happens more and more once you pass 30, apparently. And 20s doesn't visit you at all. and I was just thinking about when your end comes, it's so unlikely that you end up where you've finished. You've got to do this final trip to where you're going to end up. And how are you going to get there? And who's going to do that for you? And do you care where that is or who it is? And it was fascinating.
Oh, tell me how to let it go. Just like this in a medicated bliss. Is it still a terrifying overload? A stultifying open road. If I pay a ferry boat, will you carry my load? In which I fail, set my glories alight, and still fight you tooth and nail. But my youth is screaming, the door never really shuts. Despite agoraphobic ifs and buts, you're close to going through. Will you carry me too? And I know that I have it all in the same way as you do. We all take a unique fall in the final scene, to a violin strain or a crashing train. We each need somebody to teach us how to be carried. Gates, who has the list? Has this all been uber fate? Is every move a known footprint fossilized, a rare remake realized? And if you fall too soon, I'll carry you. And I know that I have it all in the same way as you do. Final scene, to a violin strain or a crashing train. In the pounding rain and the thunder rolls in, and the vertigo comes and goes and comes and goes and comes. We each need somebody to teach us how Rain's been falling on me. I've been covered in cold. I've been shrouded in doubt. My heart is on a wire, sitting pretty like a bird. But the hunter is out, and the eagle is heard. The word that I feel. Yes, I can feel it all. I'm listening to the sky, and I'll be looking to the stars, maybe thinking of you, wondering where you are, and do you know what you've done for me? You made my branches grow. Now they can play with the wind, and they can carry the snow, and they can feel it all. Yes, they can
Katie Tunstall is live with us today, and we're in the World Cafe studio, so we're hearing music from her new album, and, which I was listening to earlier, and as I was listening to, I was just kind of concentrating on your voice, Katie, and I was saying, God, this is the kind of voice that producers must hear and go, oh, my God, I can do anything with this. And you've really kind of resisted that throughout the career. You've really...
Yeah, it hasn't been deliberate, to be honest. I've kind of just always... felt like this package where I'm writing, it's rhythm, it's energy, and this album is all about the voice, and it's almost sort of like discovering that I can sing like this. Or maybe even more having faith that it doesn't have to be a party all the time.
Quieter.
Yeah, that I can trust and lean on my voice and allow that to be the main star of the show, if you like, rather than having to sort of be entertaining all the time.
Or part of the production.
Yeah,
or part of
yeah.
The, yeah. And that's it works really well on this. It's really, really...
I think that partly having such a surprisingly successful first album, because I didn't know that that was going to happen, you do end up, I did end up feeling the pressure to kind of deliver when I was performing for people. And that people so fell in love with that album that I really did feel like I kind of wanted to give them what they wanted. And you can't follow that as an artist. You can't worry about what other people want from you. You've got to do what you want to do yourself. Otherwise, you just end up in a very non-creative place, I think.
Well, your last album, Tiger Suit, was a bit of an experiment too.
It was. And that was definitely me having fun. And that was me rebelling. But it was very centered on production and sound and getting excited about dance music and electronic instruments and trying stuff out. But there was a real frustration there that led to that, of just wanting to do something different.
What are you doing with Jules Holland? And I find it really interesting that you're doing something with Jules.
Well, obviously, Jules was my big breakthrough
right,
moment.
Right, at the beginning.
It was like the metaphorical human cannon. He kind of packed me in and then lit the fuse. And I've just been on his show again a couple of weeks ago, which hopefully you guys will get on YouTube soon. And I'm, again, just on my own. So it's kind of a bit of a full circle, really. But Jules asked me to sing with his big band. He has a big swing band. And this was one of the things that kind of gave me the confidence to really go for it as a singer, because he said, I was thinking about who I wanted to front the band for this tour, and I thought of you, and it was about your voice, not, you know, first and foremost. And I thought, wow, I am a singer. I'm not just a musician. I am a singer, too.
Well, you've had an experience that nobody I know, and people even have on the show, I haven't had the experience. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that experience and what happened being on and how quickly you felt the effects of that.
Well, before the Jules Holland appearance in 2004, I'd spent the best part of 10 years trying to get somewhere.
Wow.
So the whole of my 20s had been spent trying to get basically make a living. I wasn't bothered about getting super famous. I just didn't want another job. That was the goal, to be a vocational musician. When I played that show, the record wasn't out yet. It was a month or so before the record came out. That song wasn't on the album.
Really?
No, that had been written after the album was finished, and my label guys just said, no, seriously, you need to play that one. It's not on the album. Don't worry about it. Just play it. And so the first 10,000 copies of Eye to the Telescope have the audio from Jules Holland, because we didn't have a recording of it. And then I think when the album came out in December, that was October, December, the album went in at 73 on the British charts. And a year later, it got to number 3. So it was just this really steady climb. And that year later, it was when 2005 was when I first came to the States. And a similar thing really happened with the Today Show, and then great radio support. And it was a very grassroots thing that happened. So it was a slow build and a slow burn, which I always think is the best. Mm. And word of mouth and a lot of hard work. And really through that whole thing, I just kept my head down. I was doing the same thing. There was just more people in the room and they were paying. And so I kind of just held on to the fact that it was actually the same. Nothing was changing. Really, but it did. And with hindsight now, I have to admit that it did have its effects, and it was a very strange experience in many ways.
It's so strange to me, because you can have all this talent, and sometimes it comes down to a song in a weird way. It's almost, there's certain amounts of luck involved, I know, but it's, you wrote that song, so.
Yeah, well, and it is, the songs are, the kind of, I did a great interview recently about creativity, and they said, where do you feel your creativity resides? And I've always felt that it's this kind of wispy river that's going past at enormous speed, about 2 feet above my head. And I have to just reach up and grab it, because if I don't get it, the next person's going to get it. And you've got to just keep your eyes open for whatever it is. And so you do have to get up in the middle of the night and record something if you think it's good, because you kind of start to realize how special it is when that happens.
Katie Dunstall is our guest today, and we're talking about old and new music. And, you know, can I call an audible? Is it possible you could do that?
Say again?
Is it possible you could do Black Horse Cherry Tree?
I could.
Oh, great.
Why, of course.
So I'm gonna let it do all its own. I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. I felt a little fear upon my back, said don't look back, just keep on walking. The big black horse said look this way, said Helena, will you marry me? But I said, no, 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 you're not the one for me. No, 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 you're not the one for me. No, 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 no. My heart hit a problem in the early hours, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two. But I cut some cord and shouldn't have done it. Won't forgive me after all these years. So I sent it to a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. But it won't come back cause it's all so happy now. I got a hole for the world to see, yeah.
Katie Tunstall, the new album is Invisible Empire Crescent Moon. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Playing live for us.
Great to come back.